What we will do now is I will say what I always say about now, and by way of introduction, turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. If you want to get there quickly, you can turn to chapter 6 of the book of Bereshit, or Genesis. We actually read the first few verses, and the story of Noah actually ends up kind of bridging two Torah portions. But in fact, it begins, the first word in the Torah portion that is unique is the word, these are the toldot of Noach, that would be verse 9, Noach was in his generations tamim, perfect, wholehearted, he walked with Elohim, and he was a man who was a tzaddik, he was righteous, in other words, he knew his instruction. But let's back up just a second, because we got to set the stage, and of course that was set last week, where it says that the men began to multiply on the face of the earth. The B'nai Elohim, the sons of Elohim, literally these would probably, that seems to be the general understanding, be fallen angels. And they took from the human population any women that they wanted. I don't know that wives is a good translation here in this case. They just took women. Anybody they wanted. It doesn't say the women had any choice. And basically, this was pretty upsetting to Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. He says, my spirit shall not abide in man forever. He's flesh. His days are going to be 120 years. But it takes a little while. The lifespans declined over time. And then it says the Nephilim. So here's that word. It only appears a few places in Scripture. The Nephilim were in the earth in those days, also after that. These were the first generations of the half-breeds, if you will. And then later they're called Rephaim, the future that was, I guess probably the right way to put it is tainted DNA. Those who were not perfect in their generations, or Tamim. And looks like there was a lot of corruption of the gene pool. And the daughters of the sons of Elohim came into the daughters of men. They had children. These, it says, were the mighty men of old. And the wickedness was great. Every imagination of the thoughts of his heart of mankind was only evil continually. And Yah was upset that he'd ever made man. I'm going to blot him out, he said. But then again, Noah, that's the last verse in the last week. He found grace. Chen. It's the first time that word's used. And it is the fact. It makes the point. Grace was here. All the way back into Bereshit, into Genesis. Noah found it. And he had three sons, we're told in verse 10. Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth was corrupt. That's an interesting word here. The word there is shachat. And that's an interesting Hebrew word. It's rendered as corrupt, but also decayed, or basically just disgusting. And the earth was filled with, here's another word you may have heard. There's an organization that actually uses this name, which tells you everything you need to know probably about them. The earth was filled with Hamas, violence. And Elohim saw Haaretz, and behold, it was shachat. It was corrupt, decaying. All flesh had corrupted, same word again, their way upon the earth. And Elohim then says to Noah, look, the end of all flesh is come before me. The earth is now filled with Hamas. And through them, these nasty people, behold, there I will destroy them along with the earth. I'm going to destroy everybody. So, what he asks Noah to do, make yourself an ark out of gopher wood. With rooms you shall make the ark. Pitch it within and without with pitch. So, pitch is kind of a tarry substance, waterproofing basically. You've got to put this on the inside and the outside to make this thing waterproof. It doesn't say that literally, but that does seem to be the case and the point. And this is how you'll make it. Length of the ark, 300 cubits, roughly 450 feet long. It's big. The breadth of it, 50 cubits, around 75 feet. The height, 30 cubits. And you'll make a light to the ark, and a cubit, you shall finish it upward. The door of the ark, you'll set on the side of it with lower, second, and third stories, or floors, you'll make this thing. So it's three stories tall. Behold, I bring the waters of the flood upon the earth to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life, the Ruach Chaim, from under Hashemayim. Everything that's in the earth is going to die. But I will establish my covenant, my Brit, Briti, of course it's the possessive form, my Brit, Briti, with you, and you shall come into the ark, you and your sons' wives, and your wife with you, and of every living thing of all flesh, two of each kind, male and female, you'll bring to keep them alive. And of the fowl after their kind, and of the cattle after their kind, every creeping thing on the ground, after its kind, two of every sort you shall bring with you to keep them alive. Now, a lot of times, I remember so many people being surprised, right? Everybody that's here, I'm sure, has heard this. There's more to it than that. It wasn't just two of every animal. It turns out there were clean animals, cattle, like cows, and goats, and sheep, and probably elk, and antelope, and deer. They were brought seven pairs of the clean animals. So this is surprising to a lot of folks because they don't read the rest of it, and B, because they don't understand what clean animals are anyway. Noah did. He knew what was being talked about, and this was before Moses wrote it down in the Torah. So it's one of those things that's kind of funny simply because it surprises me still that a lot of people don't know this. You take of all the food that is eaten, and you gather it to yourself. In other words, he's going to have storerooms of food that the animals are going to eat. This will be for food for them and for you. Thus did Noah. So, according to all that Yahuwah commanded him, so did he. We're going to see this phrase repeated a lot of times about Moses, too, of course. And it's good praise. Noah did as he was commanded. Everything he was commanded to do, he did. Yahuwah then said to Noah, "Come, you and all your house into the ark, for I have seen that you are righteous. You're a tzaddik. You walk in obedience for me in this generation, in this era, this time, and bedor. Of every clean beast," and here's the place where it's there, but a lot of people miss it. "Of every clean beast, you'll take to you seven and seven, each with his mate. And of the beasts that are not clean, two by two, each with his mate. Of the fowl of the air," this is interesting, "how many," this is like a test question, "how many fowl of the air?" Answer, "seven and seven, male and female." So the fowl, even presumably, because it says all the birds, even presumably hawks and owls and ravens and things, you're going to take seven pairs of those to keep their seed alive upon the face of all Haaretz. Now, still 7 days off, then I'm going to cause it to rain upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights, and every living substance that I have made will I blot out from the face of the earth. And Noah did, according to all that Yahuwah commanded him, and when the waters of the flood came, he was 600 years old. So I mentioned this before. If you do the timeline, and we're going to see you can do it because it's going to be in this Torah portion as well, you have the all the begattings and the times and the ages of the men when they brought forth their children, and you can, in fact, establish a timeline all the way back from the time of Noah back to the beginning, in the beginning when Adam was upon the face of the earth. Turns out that when you add it all up, it's really pretty close to around 2,000 years, almost exactly. So here we are. Noah goes in, along with his sons and his wife, and his son's wife with wives with him, into the ark, because the waters of the flood were coming. Of clean beasts and of beasts that are not clean, fowls and of everything that creeps upon the earth, there went in, two by two, unto Noah into the ark, male and female, as Yahuwah commanded Noah. And it came to pass after that 7 days that the waters of the flood were upon the earth. They came. In the 600th year of Noah's life, second month, 17th day of the month, on that same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. And the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. And now, that self same day, Noah and Shem and Ham and Japheth, Noah's three sons, and his wife, and the three wives of his sons with them, they all went into the ark. They and every beast after its kind, and all the cattle after their kind, every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth after its kind, every fowl after its kind, every bird of every sort. They went in to Noah and into the ark, two by two, of all the flesh wherein is contained the Ruach Chaim, the breath of life. They all went in, male and female of all flesh, as Yahuwah commanded him. Notice this is repeated several times. It must be really important. And it is. I mean, we're talking about saving the lives of these, well, the lives of the creatures that they would then be able to repopulate after the flood, because he's wiping everything else out. As Yahuwah commanded him. And then it says, Yahuwah shut them in, literally sealed them up. And the flood was 40 days upon the earth. The waters increased. They bore the ark up. In other words, eventually the waters came up and it floated and it was lifted above the earth. And the waters prevailed. They increased greatly upon the earth. The ark went upon the face of the waters, and they prevailed exceedingly to the point where the high mountains were eventually all along up to the heavens covered up. 15 cubits cubits upward did the waters prevail, and the mountains were covered. So the high mountains, and then still 15 cubits more. And all flesh perished that moved upon the earth, both fowl, cattle, and beast, every swarming thing that swarms upon the earth, and every man, all in whose nostrils was that breath, that ruach chayim, whatsoever was on the dry land, it died. And he blotted out every living substance upon the face of the ground, both man and cattle and creeping thing, fowl of the heavens, they were blotted out from the earth, and Noah alone was left, and those that were with him there in the ark. And the waters prevailed upon the earth for 150 days. Now it says, chapter 8, and this is the first time this word is used. It's kind of interesting. The word we recognize is zakar. And we say, well, what does that mean? It means to remember. But I don't think it's the case that Yah actually forgot. And since this is the first time the word is used, the way I like to think of it is more along the lines of he brought to mind. He never forgot him, but he brought to mind Noah and every living thing and all the cattle that were with him in the ark. And Elohim made a wind pass over the earth, the waters assuaged. Fountains of the deep and the windows of heaven were stopped, and the rain from heaven was restrained. The waters then returned from off the earth continually, and after the end of 150 days, the waters decreased. So they started to head the other direction. The ark rested then in the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, upon the mountains of Ararat. The waters decreased continually up until the 10th month. On the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains were first seen. Then it came to pass at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark, which he'd made, and he sent forth a raven. Now, this is kind of interesting because the question I always want to ask is why? And we're not actually told. As a matter of fact, it doesn't seem to matter. The raven went forth to and fro till the waters were dried up from off the earth. But it doesn't say what happened to the raven. Just that he sent forth one and it went around. Now, then he sent forth a dove. Now, the dove, we're going to hear more about, the dove actually comes back. So, first he sends forth a dove to see if the waters were abated from off the face of the ground. Now, maybe the reason is because the crow didn't meet the requirements. We're not told. But the dove didn't find any rest for the sole of her foot. So she returned unto him into the ark. For the waters were still on the face of the whole earth. He put forth his hand, he took her in, and he brought her into the ark. And he stayed there another 7 days. And then a second time, he sent forth the dove out of the ark. Now this time the dove came into him at eventide, and lo, in her mouth she had an olive leaf freshly plucked. So Noah knew that the waters had abated from off the earth. Now, abated doesn't mean it was dry, obviously. It just means that there was some spots where she found a tree, an olive tree. Now, again, he stayed yet another 7 days. He sent forth the dove. This time, she didn't return anymore. So it came to pass in the 601st year, in the first month, first day of the month, the waters were dried up from off the earth. And Noah removed the covering of the ark and looked, and behold, the face of the ground had dried. In the second month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth was dry. And this time it says, Elohim spoke to Noah, and he said, go forth, get out of the ark, you, your wife, your sons, and your sons' wives with you, and bring forth with you every living thing that's in there, all of the flesh, both fowl and cattle, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, that they may, what? Here is the first commandment repeated. Swarm in the earth, and be fruitful, and multiply upon the earth. So Noah came out, and his wives and his wife and his sons and his sons' wives with him, and every beast, every creeping thing, every fowl whatsoever moved upon the earth after their families, they all too came out of the ark. Then Noah built an altar unto Yahuwah. He took of every clean beast. Here is part of the reason why he got seven of the clean beasts. He took of every clean beast and every clean fowl, and he offered. Notice he says every clean fowl. So he has seven of all the birds, but only the clean fowl are going to be offered on the altar as burnt offerings. Again, the Torah has not been written down yet, so how does Noah know? He seems to understand what is clean and what is unclean, like he'd been told. Yahuwah then smelled the sweet savor, and Yahuwah said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground, ha-adamah, anymore for the sake of ha-adam. For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth, nor will I ever again smite any more every living thing as I have done. while the earth remains, seed time and harvest and cold and heat and summer and winter and day and night shall not cease. So here is a wonderful promise. Doesn't mean he's not going to smite the earth anymore. He's just not going to do it with water specifically. Chapter 9 says, And Elohim blessed Noah and his sons, and he said to them, here's that repeated command, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And now he gives them an interesting modification, I guess you'd say. Things are going to change with the animal kingdom. The fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth, and upon every fowl of the air, and upon all that teem upon the ground, and upon all the fishes of the sea. Into your hand they are delivered. Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you, as the green herb have I given you all. So this is generally understood as permission to eat meat. I got to ask the question, does that mean it's good for you? He doesn't say that. He just says it's edible. In other words, you can put it in your mouth and you can chew it and your body will digest it. The question is it good for you? And as Paul later says, you know, all things are maybe, they may be okay, but they're not necessarily good for me. And that's the key, and that's part of the reason why I think it's important to read this and understand the context. Only when it comes to flesh that has the life in it thereof, which is in the blood, in other words, the life is in the blood, you shall not eat that. Now surely, the blood of your lives will I require, at the hand of every beast will I require, at the hand of man, even at the hand of every man's brother, will I require the life of man. This is, by the way, part of what is sometimes called the Noahide laws, or the things that are supposed to be universal. And what he says here is, anybody sheds mankind's blood, whoever sheds man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of Elohim, man was made. You be fruitful and multiply, swarm in the earth and multiply therein. So Elohim spoke to Noah and to his sons who were with him, and he said, As for me, behold, I establish Briti, again, my covenant with you and with your seed after you, and with every living creature that's with you, the fowl, the cattle, the beast of the earth, all of them that are with you, all that go out of the ark, even every beast of the earth. So there's a covenant with all of the animal kingdom. And I will establish my covenant with you. Neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of the flood. Neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. And here he says, now this is the famous token, oath, sign of the covenant. This is the token of that covenant which I made between you and me and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I have set my bow, rainbow, in the cloud. It shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it'll come to pass when I bring clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the cloud, that I will zakar, remember, Briti, my covenant, which is between me and you, and every living creature of all flesh, and the waters will no more become a flood to destroy the earth. Now, ironically, of course, folks, this is a sign of the covenant, and it is one of those things that has been perverted into exactly the opposite. It was a sign of a covenant. Now, the LGBTQ++ abomination has tried to turn something on its head and take a sign of the covenant between mankind and literally Haaretz and turn it on its head and turn it into something which is an abomination. So surely, he says, I'll remember it when I see. I will remember my covenant, and the waters will no more become a flood to destroy all flesh. Now that bow shall be in the cloud. I'll look upon it, that I might zakar this everlasting covenant between Elohim and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. And Elohim says to Noah, this is the token of that covenant which I've established between me and all flesh that's upon the earth. This is repeated in a couple different ways so that it's real clear. This rainbow is a token, a symbol, an oath, a sign of his covenant. Not just between he and mankind, but between all flesh and the earth itself, all flesh that's upon the earth. Now the sons of Noah that went forth from the ark, they were, we know the names, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Ham, it says, is the father of Canaan. These three were the sons of Noah, and of these was the whole earth overspread. So it might be that Eve is the mother of all living, but what we now know is that through Noah, all of us that are descended after the flood came through that bloodline. Noach, it says, the husbandman began. Now, let's pause. This is an interesting one, too. So you got a fellow who is described as Ish, right? That's another word for man. Ish ha Adamah. Ish ha Adamah. Everybody want to try it? We know Adam was made from Adamah, the ground. And what this is saying is literally Noach was a man of the ground. He planted a vineyard. He drank of the wine and he became drunk. And he was found uncovered within his tent by Ham, the father of Canaan, who saw the nakedness of his father, told his two brothers about it. They were outside. And Shem and Japheth took a garment, they laid it upon their shoulders, and they went in backwards to their father's tent and covered the nakedness of their father. So their faces were backwards, and they did not see their father's nakedness. They were very careful not to do what it was that Ham had obviously done and was trying to get them to do. Now, Noah then awoke from his wine, and he knew what his youngest son had done unto him. Now, here's the question. Exactly what was it? And answer, the Midrash has any number of possible explanations about what's going on here. I won't repeat any of them. You'll no doubt hear them. But I do think, essentially, is it merely that he saw his father's nakedness, or was there more to it? There seems to be an implication of that. Again, the Midrash, there's all kinds of speculation, but I got to suggest that's probably what it is, because we do not know for sure. We're not explicitly told. But what we do know is Noah then said the following. And notice he does not curse his son. He curses his grandson, his son's son. Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall he be unto his brethren. And then he said, blessed be Yahuwah, Elohim of Shem, and let Canaan be their servant. Elohim enlarge Japheth, and he shall dwell in the tents of Shem, and let Canaan be their servant. So he is cursing Canaan, the son of his son. Noah then lived after that flood 350 years more. And all the days of Noah were 950 years, and he died. Now, chapter 10 tells us, again, the toldot, the generations. And I'll go through this fairly rapidly. I encourage folks, read these. You're going to notice that there are a lot of names in here. And the interesting thing about many of these names, if not most of them, is some of them ended up being place names. In other words, they're names of people. And the names of people either founded cities or locales. And so we know those names for that reason. And also, in some cases, of course, they're described as the descendants of the people by that name. And they're given the name based on the fact that they come from that line. So, these are the toldot, the generations of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Unto them were sons born after the flood. Sons of Japheth, so number two son, Gomer, Magog, Madina, Magog, right? We know that name. And Yavan, Tubal, Meshech, and Tiras. The sons of Gomer, that would be one of the sons of Japheth. So these would be grandsons. Ashkenaz. Oh, well, there we know. Ashkenaz is a name that's often given to an entire, essentially a sect or a line of Judaism. And Riphath and Togarmah, the sons of Yavan, one of the sons of Japheth, Elisha, Tarshish, there's a place name, Kittim, and Dodanim. Of these were the isles of the nations divided in their lands, everyone after his tongue, after their families and their nations. Right, the sons of Ham. Well, we know one of them. Cush is one of them. And Mitzrayim. Oh, wait a minute. Mitzrayim is the name that goes later for all of Egypt, right? And Put and Canaan. And, of course, we know that Canaan not only is the name of the son, but the Canaanites come from him. And this land that was called the land of Canaan before it was given to the Israelites. Sons of Cush, Seba, Havilah, Sabta, and Raamah. And Sabteka, the sons of Raamah, Sheba, and Dedan. Cush, he had a famous son, Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before Yahuwah. Therefore, it said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before Yahuwah. Beginning of his kingdom was, we all know the word, Babel, and Erech, and Akkad, and Calne, in the land of Shinar. Oh, yeah. Well, basically, that is pretty much the land of Babylon. Out of that land went forth Ashur. He built Nineveh. We've heard that a name, city name. And Reboth-ir and Calah. And Rezin between Nineveh and Calah, the same as the great city. And Mitzrayim. Well, fine. You kind of get the idea. Maybe Mitzrayim is going to bring forth eventually the people that populated Egypt, right? He begot Ludim and Anamim and Lehabim and Naphtuhim and Pathrusim and Kashluhim. Therefore came the Philistines and Kaphtorim. Canaan begot Zidon, his firstborn, and Heth. Remember, we're going to hear about the sons of Heth later. They're going to deal with Abraham and the cave of Machpelah. And the Jebusite and the Amorite and the Girgashite and the Hivite and the Arkite and the Sinite and the Arvadite, the Zemarite and the Hamathite. And afterward were the families of Canaan spread abroad. So out of Canaan basically come a whole lot of Canaanites. The borders of the Canaanite was from Zidon, as far as you go towards Gerar, unto Gaza. There's a name we can recognize today. As you go towards Sodom and Gomorrah, and Adma and Zeboim, unto Lasha. These, it says, are the sons of Ham, after their families and their tongues, in their lands and their nations. All right, next, Shem, father of all of the children of Eber, the elder brother of Japheth. To him also were children born. And his sons, Elam, and Ashur, and Arpachshad, and Lud, and Aram. The sons of Aram were Uz, Hul, Geter, and Mash. And Arpachshad begot Shelah, Shelah begot Eber, and unto Eber were born two sons. The name of the first one was Peleg. All right, his time saw the earth divided, and his brother's name was Yoktan. So one popular line of thought is that, what does that mean? Well, there's a theory you probably heard about continental drift and how at one point the continents were all part of one great big land mass. And you've seen maps, I'm sure, of how the masses of Africa and North America and South America all fit together. Well, anyway, the claim is that this reference here, in his days was the earth divided, time of Peleg, that's when it happened. Got to be some major earthquakes associated with that, you would figure. Yoktan begot Almodad and Shelef and Hazar Mavet and Yera and Hadaram and Uzal and Dikla and Obal and Abimael and Sheba and Ophir and Havilah and Yoka. These were all the sons of Yoktan. So one of the sons of Shem. And actually this would be the sons of Shem. And their dwelling was from Mesha, as you go east towards Sephar, under the mountains of the east. These are the sons of Shem, their families, after their tongues, in their lands, after their nations. And these are the families of the sons of Noah, after their generations, their toldot, in their nations. And of these were the nations divided in the earth after the flood. Now, if you've heard this reference to the 70 nations, this is what the Midrash generally says. This is these 70 nations that came from Noah and his three sons. And then we're going to get one more famous story. Everybody's heard this one. Kind of the conclusion of this week's Torah portion. After the flood, the whole earth was of one language and one speech. It came to pass as they journeyed east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Okay, Shinar, okay, this one looks like Babylon. A modern terminology. They said to one another, hey, you know what, let's make some brick and burn them thoroughly. So I've heard it taught, and I can't argue with this, that what was the technological development here that enables this was the idea of uniform, completely mass-producible and mass-stackable bricks. That this was the technological innovation that enabled them to do this. So they're going to make bricks, burn them, in other words, bake them thoroughly. They had brick for stone, and then they had slime for mortar, so they could stack these things. And they said, come on, let's build a city. Build a tower with its top in Hashemayim, in the heavens. And let's make a name, a Shem, for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. The implication here seems to go with the Midrash. I can at least see where the Midrash gets the claim that what they were doing was saying, oh, look, we had this flood before. Maybe they don't believe the Creator, or maybe they believe he might try something else, and they seem to think we're going to end up falling back into the same kind of problems that got us whacked to begin with. So let's see if we can't build a tower so we can prevent that from happening again. Yahuwah came down to see the city and the tower, which the children of men were building, and Yahuwah said, behold, they are a people, echad, united. And they have a language that is united, echad, singular. And this is what they begin to do. And now nothing will be withholden from them that they purport to try to do. So let's go on down there, confound their language, so that they may not understand one another's speech. And the word here that's interesting, confound, the root word is bela, and it's the first time we see it, the first use here, belal. And it's also used with this idea of something that is mingled with oil, like water mingled with oil. But the idea is the language is now going to be mingled so that it's going to be, confounded. It's going to be difficult for one to understand another. So Yahuwah then scattered them abroad from there upon the face of all the earth. And they quit building on that city. Therefore the name of the place was called, you know it, Babel. And later Babylon comes from that. Because Yahuwah there confounded Balel, the language of all the earth. And from there did Yahuwah scatter them abroad upon the face of the earth. And then it says, these are the generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old, and he begot Arpachshad 2 years after the flood. And after he begot his son Arpachshad, he lived 500 years, had other sons and daughters. And what that means, if we do the timeline and plot these lifespans out, that means, just for purposes of interest, we're going to see this in the next Torah portion, he was still alive during the time of Abram, later Abraham. Pakshad, he lived 35 years. He begot Shelah. And after he had Shelah, he lived another 403 years, had other sons and daughters. And Shelah, he lived 30 years. He begot Eber. And after he begot Eber, he lived 403 years. He had other sons and daughters. Eber lived 34 years. He begot Peleg. Remember, that's during the time when the earth was divided. Eber lived after he begot Peleg, another 430 years. He had sons and daughters. Peleg, he was 30 when he begot Reu. And after that, he lived another 209 years. Notice the numbers are slowly coming down. He had other sons and daughters. Reu, he was 32. He begot Serug. After that, he lived 207 years, had sons and daughters. And when Serug was 30 years old, he begot Nahor. Now, some of these names are starting to sound familiar for a different reason, right? So we've got a number of generations after the time of the flood. But notice, when you add up the firstborn of all of these, it's really not all that long of a time. And obviously, Shem, he is still alive, as are a number of the other fathers and grandfathers and great-great-grandfathers. Nahor, he was 29 years old. He begot a fella. Oh, this name is familiar. Terah. After he begot Terah, he lived 119 years. He had sons and daughters. Terah, when he lived 70 years, he begot three names we definitely have heard, Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Different Nahor, right? Now, these are the generations of Terah. Terah begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran, he had a son, we know that name, Lot. Then Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his nativity, the Ur of the Chaldees. There's another one of those names. And Abram and Nahor, they both took wives. The name of Abram's wife, we know it, don't we? Sarai. The name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, father of Milcah, and the father of Ishka. We're getting to the point where we're going to see the birth of the first of the patriarchs. But we've got a ways to get there. And this is where the Torah portion is going to end in this situation, where Abram, he has not yet been renamed, but he does have this wife, Sarah, Sarai at this point, who turns out she's childless. She is barren. She had no child. So Terah, he took Abram, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they all went forth from Ur of the Chaldees, and they headed south to go into the land of Canaan. They came into Haran, and they dwelt there. So it sounds like they've named this place after the son, who was, in fact, Lot's father. So they dwelt there. Now, the the map story and the Midrash will suggest that what they did here is they moved out of this place that was in the plains there of Shinar, Ur of the Chaldees, and up way in that direction. They have gone about a fourth of the way to the place that will eventually be Yerushalayim. So they've moved in that direction, but they're not nearly all the way there yet. That's gonna happen in the next Torah portion. The days then finally, this is the last verse in the portion of Terah. They were 205 years, and then he died in the place called Haran. You notice we've now covered a little over, 2,000 plus years and another several centuries past the flood. To the beginning of a whole new era in terms of the way Elohim is going to deal with mankind. And that is going to take us into the life of the first patriarch, Abram. And later we know he's going to be renamed.